Hey, it's Becca.
It's Nancy.
It's Brixie.
And this is
Insane Investigations.
Hey, investigators.
Welcome to part two of our Quiet on Set summary.
Sorry for the delay in getting part two out. Obviously, life got in the way as per usual.
But we hope you enjoyed the first part, and today we're going to get into exactly what happened. We kind of left on a bit of a cliffhanger last week where we were talking about Brian Peck getting arrested.
So we'll be going into detail around what he was arrested for, essentially.
But first we're just going to get into Drake Bell and who he was, because he does play a major part in the whole story. So Drake Bell got into acting because his parents were going through a pretty bad divorce, and his dad was looking for ways to spend time with Drake and like different things that they could do together. Drake was always really interested in music, old films, and comedy. So when his dad seen an ad for the Kids Hollywood Connection in a parenting magazine, he knew that Drake would be interested. And once Drake's mom gave him the sign off to go ahead, he started bringing Drake to auditions.
So Joe, Drake's dad, started taking Drake to the auditions, and it literally became his life. They would go out in the morning and be in auditions all day. Drake got some parts in commercials, and him and his dad actually got really close. It was a really good bonding experience for the two of them.
I think that was kind of the plan. I don't think the plan was to ever get like super famous. It was always just like to bond.
Something to do.
But then he started kind of getting bigger parts in the auditions he was going to. Like, he was on Seinfeld and Home Improvement. He was on an episode of each of those.
I remember watching Home Improvement as a kid.
I don't think I ever watched it.
I feel like the name rings a bell.
I feel like it would have been before your time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember growing up watching Tim Allen and Tim the Tall Man Taylor.
Yeah, like, I've definitely heard of it.
Yeah.
But I don't think I ever watched it.
I can't remember it, no.
Seinfeld I've watched, but that was also before my time. I just went back and watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never watched Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I've seen bits of it just on TV. I've never, like, sat and watched it properly or anything like that.
No. Whereas Home Improvement, I literally watched every episode.
You've actually watched?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see the bit with Drake Bell in it? I probably can't remember.
Probably would have done. I watch every episode, so
he most likely did.
But I wouldn't have known who he was at that point.
Fair.
Yeah, and I think he looked so different as a child. Like, if you look at him in his adverts, and even in the first movie he was in with Tom Cruise, like, you would not think that that's Drake Bell. I don't think, anyway.
Yeah, like, when I saw it on the documentary, I was like, oh my god, he's so adorable, but it doesn't look like him.
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Well, by the time he was 12, he looked more like the Drake Bell we know in Drake and Josh, and he got a part on The Amanda Show.
And that's where he got the part that you relate to the most, Becca.
Totally Kyle.
Yeah.
My favourite. There's a photo of him playing Totally Kyle on our Instagram, but if you haven't seen it, like, you should look it up.
Yeah.
A video of Totally Kyle, it's funny.
So for season two, they actually ended up moving from Paramount Studios to Nick on Sunset, and that was where Drake Bell came in contact with Brian Peck. So in the documentary, it was the first time that Drake ended up speaking out about his experiences working at Nickelodeon, especially with Brian Peck. So while he was working at Nickelodeon, Drake ended up in a skit with Josh Peck, and then they ended up having really good chemistry. And that was basically when Drake and Josh was created, and that was back in January 2004. Dan Schneider created that show for Drake and Josh. While they were working on the show, before it was actually launched, there was a lot of stuff that ended up happening. So Brian and Drake, from the start, had a great relationship. Brian, as we know, had worked on so many sets, and he knew a lot about the industry and Hollywood. So obviously Drake, kind of being new to having his own TV show and all that kind of stuff, where he was going to be a lead role, he was fascinated by a lot of the stuff that Brian knew. So the two of them eventually end up getting really, really close. Brian was also giving Drake like acting lessons back at Brian's home. So Joe, Drake's dad, would always go with Drake to these acting lessons back at Brian's home, just to basically be a good dad and keep an eye on him while he was with Brian.
I think Joe just got a vibe from Brian straight away. Like, he never left Drake and Brian alone.
Yeah, he was definitely like a good father. Because you heard about some of the other kids' experiences where the parents kind of just became really trusting of the people who were, you know, managing the show and stuff. So they were just kind of like, oh, okay, just let them do their thing. They just had a lot of faith.
Yeah, whereas Joe was like very protective and was like, I'm still keeping an eye on my kid.
Yeah, definitely.
But even though Joe was kind of always around, it didn't stop Brian from constantly hanging around Drake. And Joe was starting to notice that it was kind of happening a bit too much. And he was very, like, physical with Drake. Like, he was
touchy-feely.
Yeah, like, he wasn't, like, touching him inappropriately in front of people, but he always had to have, like, an arm around him, or, like, he'd, like, run his hand up his arm and just really close to him when it just wasn't necessary. I think Joe even said in the documentary that there were times where he'd, like, come in while Drake was in wardrobe and be, like, helping him put on clothes that he just didn't need help putting on.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it was like, just weird.
Yeah.
At one point, he was even putting his hand, like, around his waist. It was just...
Strange.
And I think Joe just kind of started looking into Brian's past. And he found a clip of Brian on the set of Growing Pains with Leonardo DiCaprio. And in that clip, he's acting very, very similar with Leo as he did with Drake. So he's, like, grabbing his shoulder, running his hand up and down his arm, and just being... touchy-feely again. Strange.
So at first, Joe didn't say anything about the touchy-feeliness that was going on. He just decided to keep an eye on Brian when he was around Drake. But eventually it just got too much and Joe went to production. And he said he doesn't have a good feeling about Brian and how he is with Drake. Production said, well, he's gay, maybe you're just homophobic and he's just touchy-feely. It's like,
completely fobbing it off. Like,
fobbing it off. That wouldn't put my mind at ease either. It's like, okay, so...
If, like, anything, that's
worse.
Reinforcing my suspicions.
That this fellow is touching my teenage son.
Yeah.
So Joe did speak to other parents about it and no one else was concerned. So kind of like similar with Jason Handy.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was like, oh, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah, like, sure, he can do no harm. It's similar with Brian as well,
But what I can't understand is, like, Pickle Boy alone
should have been a red flag.
That in itself,
how did somebody not walk out onto that set and say, get that man away from those children? He's shoving pickles through glory holes and thinking it's funny. Like,
Very creepy.
It's very, very weird.
So once Drake and Josh was announced, Brian was pushing further into Drake's life. Brian would go to concerts that Drake was performing at, no matter how far away they were. So they weren't even like just the ones that was local.
He would travel.
To see these.
Once again, it's a bit
weird.
Fair enough, you want to be supportive of a child that you work with on the shows, whatever, and you might want to go to a few, like, local concerts, but the fact that he was going far out to go and see him is a bit...
Like, Drake even said, Dan Schneider, who at that point knew Drake for much longer than Brian did, would go to a concert if it was close to where he lived.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be fucking packing up his car for a road trip to see Drake perform it. It's weird.
Definitely there was, like, red flags starting to emerge now. More and more as time went on.
And, like, Drake's 15 years old. He's just there thinking, like, oh, my friends are coming to my show. This is great.
Someone, like, as well who knows a lot about the Hollywood industry and fame and probably has a lot of connections as well. So obviously you can imagine Drake being a child going, it's amazing that this I have an acquaintance like this.
Thinking about his career and nothing else. Like.
So at the time, Drake was living in Orange County, which is about an hour away from the set, and majority of the cast members lived quite close to the set. So when his 15th birthday was coming up, Brian wanted to have a party at his gaff. Joe didn't really understand why, but Brian had already kind of gotten into Drake's head and been like, oh, you can perform for everybody. And Drake was excited at that point. So what could Joe really do? Just be like, no.
Yeah, so once again, I can see where the dad's kind of like, right, why is this adult willing to host the thing?
Yeah, like, pick an outside venue that is close to the studio, but so it's house, close to his friends, but
his house is a bit... Yeah. But then again, I don't know, I suppose, look, Brian portrayed himself as this...
Yeah, but might I just point out his house that has the clown portrait from John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite...
He just wanted to show people that portrait. Right? He was like, everyone come over to my house.
Yeah, it's just... It's fucked. But what I found very manipulative was, like, if you're an adult and you, for whatever reason, are throwing a party for somebody else's child, does it not make sense to speak to the parent before the child?
The child.
Rather than filling the child with all these great ideas and like, oh, this has to happen.
All your friends can come because it's closer to the studio. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Like, speak to the parents and say, look, I have an idea. It's your son's birthday coming up. Look, I know yous live a good bit away, but if yous are up for it, I don't mind. I can, everyone can come over to mine or whatever. Have that conversation with them. Definitely, no, I agree. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I just think it's very manipulative because then when Drake goes to his parents, well, they're the cunts if they say no.
Yeah, they're the bad guys then.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
Brian would have got something out of that either way. He would have either thrown the party or he would have drove a wedge between Drake and his parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it definitely, like, now that you said that, that definitely seems like that was his game plan all along.
Yeah, I think so.
And it clearly was, because when Joe started making it hard for Brian to see Drake, Brian got further into Drake's head and made it seem like his dad was bad for his career.
Yeah.
He said that his dad was stealing his money, that no one wanted his dad on set, all of that stuff. So Drake believed that he couldn't move forward with his career with his dad. And then to go a step further, Brian also told Robin, Drake's mam, that Joe would not be good for his career.
So he's even getting the mam involved.
Getting the mam involved.
Yeah.
Setting the parents off against each other after knowing that they had a difficult split.
Yeah.
Knowing as well, he's actually getting so close to Drake. He knows well that the reason Drake got into this was to bond with his dad, to spend time with his dad.
I know he's trying to push his dad out of the picture altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt so bad for his dad as well, the documentary. His dad just seems like such a lovely person and he was such a concerned parent. Yeah. I just felt so bad that Brian basically just cut him out of Drake's career.
Yeah.
So Robin actually called Joe and said Drake doesn't want Joe to be his manager anymore. And Joe's response, which is like so sweet, was like he just wanted Drake to be happy.
Like, if that doesn't tell you how much of a good parent he is.
Yeah, like that's devastating news. Like, oh, like this thing that you're after been doing with your son for years to bond with him, that's been working so well. Yeah, you can't do it anymore. He doesn't want you around.
That's heartbreaking.
But he accepted it. He thought that
fair
enough. It just came from Drake. Drake just didn't want this anymore, and he was just trying to like go with what Drake wanted, make him happy.
Yeah, but still being the ever protective father, he did warn Robin not to leave Drake alone with Brian. So Drake and Joe's relationship was basically destroyed at this point. There was a gap of time between the Amanda show finishing and then Drake and Josh starting that Brian started getting even more involved in Drake's life.
Yeah,
Brian very quickly just kind of slid in and took over Joe's role in Drake's life. He was like, well, now that Joe's out, I'm gonna do all this with Drake. I'm gonna take him to auditions and
Disney.
Just really involving himself, like, even more.
Yeah, he was just like, spend as much time as he possibly could with Drake, whether it was auditions, working on the show, or bringing him out on these days out. That was just weird, in my opinion. Like, I wouldn't let some randomer just take my kid out to Disneyland.
And forget just taking him out, he'd also have him staying over.
Yeah.
In his house. So forget all that. Forget, fair enough, taking him out on day trips. It's a bit weird. Like, it's not even a bit weird. It is weird in general, let's be honest. But then going as far as having him constantly staying over and stuff as well is a bit...
he really took advantage of the fact that Orange County was so far out of the way.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, well, we've been at auditions all day. If we drive all the way there, it's going to be like midnight when you get home. Just stay at mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Robin obviously hadn't spent time around
Brian to the way Joe has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like she obviously didn't take any Joe's either. Advice.
Yeah.
And didn't see any issues with her.
Yeah.
So just a quick trigger warning before we move forward with the next part of the story. If you want to skip by this part, maybe skip in like a minute, because we're just going to go through details of sexual assault. So
yeah, so unfortunately, you can probably already tell where this is going, because we did already kind of cover off some of the convictions that Brian had in the last part. But in case you haven't figured it out already, Drake was one of Brian's victims. And it was one of the times when Drake was actually staying over in Brian's house. And one night he ended up waking up and found that Brian was sexually assaulting him. Obviously, look, Drake was, well, he would have only been around 15. He was a teenager at this stage. He woke up seeing that and was in a total state of shock. And he wanted to just remove himself from the situation, just leave. But obviously he was stuck there. His family was about an hour away, and his only way to them would have been Brian, so he just didn't know what to do in that situation, which, to be fair, like, I can't really blame him for that.
Yeah. He said himself, like, what am I supposed to do? Call my mom, tell her what happened over the phone, and then sit outside that man's house for an hour while she drives up to get
me? Yeah. Like, I think it's also, like, fight, flight, or freeze, and I think he just
a lot of people
froze.
Do in that type of situation, definitely.
Yeah.
Adults, never mind a 15-year-old who's staying in the home of somebody he thought he could trust 100%. It's not something that ever crossed his mind as something that could happen.
Yeah.
Obviously, this whole time, Brian was just slowly grooming him to lead up to this type of stuff. So then, obviously, when it did happen, Drake had already built such a... It's almost like... And you hear this a lot when it comes to victims, especially child victims and stuff like this, where they feel like they can't say anything, first of all, because the whole paradynamic, because it's an adult with a child. And then second of all, it also, because they're so young, naive, when something bad happens, like something like that happens, they almost are like, but this isn't them. Like, this whole time they've treated me so nicely. Like, this happened, this must just be one bad thing that's happening. Do you know what I mean? And they end up kind of staying in situations like that with their abusers for a lot longer, because they don't want to believe it's real. They don't want to believe it's happening.
Yeah.
Especially in Drake's situation. Like, he's sitting there and he's like, this man is my acting coach. He's like, after helping me so much
with my career,
now I have a show of my own since he showed up on the scene. And like, so far before this incident, Brian has had nothing but a positive impact on his life as far as he can see.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when Brian is saying, I'm so sorry, like, I didn't mean to, like, it was a mistake, it won't happen again, obviously he's going to believe him, because, as you said,
up until now, he hasn't shown, to Drake, and anyways, he hasn't shown any, like, strange red flags or behaviours to be all like, okay, this is a bad situation, I need to leave.
No, not at all. Yeah. So, basically, that kind of went on for a while, where Brian would apologise and promise to stop, but it never actually did.
Mm-hmm.
And it went on like that until Drake got a girlfriend.
So Drake was trying to distance himself a little bit and started spending more time at his girlfriend's house instead. And this one weekend, he was at his girlfriend's house and Brian was just like ringing him and ringing him. So Drake eventually answered and he said he was staying where he was.
Yeah.
But Brian kept calling and calling. They were supposed to go to Disneyland or something like that. And Brian even started calling the girlfriend's house.
Yeah.
So Drake's girlfriend's mom pulled Drake aside to see what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Drake was vague, but she knew that something wasn't right. So, like, the girlfriend's mom actually said, like, there's no way a 40-odd-year-old man is ringing a teenager like that.
Yeah.
Something's,
straight away, she knew.
Yeah, something's not right. So she called Robin and told Robin that she was going to take Drake to her own therapist because it seemed like he was in danger. Drake felt like Brian had so much control, he just couldn't tell anyone. Like, he went to the therapist and didn't tell the therapist anything. Over the years of therapy that he had, he didn't tell them what was going on.
I suppose it's also the thing as well, it's like, who's going to believe me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, Brian was such an influential person.
His word against mine sort of thing.
Exactly. Like, who am I in comparison to him? You know, who are they going to believe, me or him?
Yeah.
And, like, it's not like that's unheard of. That was most sexual assault cases for a long time. Yeah. It was just your word against the other person's. And
regardless whether it's a child or an adult, like you were saying.
They did have to reshoot the pilot for Drake and Josh, but Brian wanted to play the dad. He was trying to convince Drake to convince Dan to give him the part, and Drake was terrified that this would happen and he would never escape him. Thankfully, Brian didn't get the role to play Drake's dad, but one day Drake called his mom and just, he told her everything. Yeah. I can imagine how hard that conversation
must have been.
Yeah.
He says he doesn't know what it was that just triggered that in him, but I really think that it was that Drake was getting his own show and this man was trying to insert himself into it.
Mm-hmm.
And like Drake himself said that when that kind of started, he was like, no, you're not getting anywhere near this show.
Yeah.
And I think subconsciously that's what Drake felt like he had to do to keep Brian away from the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be what gave him the confidence to call his mom and tell her.
Yeah. Can you imagine how she would have felt as well, like, finding all of this out? Like, she trusted this guy to take care of her child.
The personal blame I would feel. Now, look, it's not her fault at the end of the day. Like, could she have done more? Yes.
Yeah.
But I can also kind of understand when everyone was turning around, they're telling you this guy's a good guy, he's been working in the industry for so long, he's always working around kids, he's really good. And obviously, you could see the impact in Drake's career, because his career was skyrocketing. He started getting his own show and all. So I don't want to say I blame her, so to speak, because it's a hard situation to be in. But if I was in her shoes, I would feel like the guilt I would feel going, I'm the mom, I probably should have known better, I should have stepped in a lot sooner. Especially the fact that Joe was fucking telling her,
yeah,
do not leave Drake with Brian. Do you know what I mean? So even that added on top of everything else, I was like, fuck, I should have listened to me ex.
Yeah. But I can see why she didn't, because at the time it was just her ex that she
already
appeared
had a
to hate.
Yeah.
And everybody else was saying that this fellow was great. So I think a lot of people in her shoes probably would have kind of brushed
been
what Joe said off
because
they weren't getting along as it was, and people were voicing concerns to her about Joe negatively impacting Drake's career. So she was kind of caught between, do I trust Drake and all these people, or do I trust my ex?
Yeah, and obviously Drake was showing to have a great relationship with Brian as well. So for me, it's like, well, if my own kid isn't saying anything, surely what could be wrong?
Because at that point, nothing had really gone wrong, and Drake wasn't seeing the signs because he was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So obviously when Drake told his mom everything, she did what any parent would do and called the police immediately, and they came to get a full report from Drake. Drake obviously told them everything that happened, and they actually had him call Brian to confess, try to get some type of confession out of him. So Drake basically called him and was like, oh, like, you know, I'm in a bad way. Like, I just don't really understand, like, why this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian just started a full-on confession. He kept asking, were they being recorded? But it didn't stop him from just being like, I did this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
Obviously, that was really, really stressful for Drake, but they got the confession, and Brian was arrested. But Drake was extremely stressed out. He was losing his hair and everything, and, like, they're trying to still, you know, get this pilot done for Drake and Josh, and he has all this going on in the background.
Yeah.
And again, he's 15.
Going through this, yeah.
Like, I cannot imagine. So when Brian was arrested and it kind of got out to everybody else, Drake did get calls from people, but nobody really suspected that he was the victim. They just called asking if like he knew what happened because he was quite close with Brian.
Yeah, and because Drake was a minor as well, they didn't have to like release any information about him.
Yeah, like his identity was hidden.
Yeah.
One person did ask if he was involved, and of course that person was Dan Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
So when Dan asked, like, Drake felt really comfortable with Dan and he got along really well with Dan, so he did tell him what happened. And apparently Dan's response was, "Stop, you don't need to talk about it anymore. That's all I needed to hear." When he was like, "Are you okay? Do you need anything from me? Is there anything that you need?" Very, very supportive
of the situation.
Yeah.
Drake is actually one of the few people that didn't really have a bad word to say about Dan. Literally everybody else.
Everyone else did.
Yeah.
Had issues, but Drake didn't have an issue with Dan.
Yeah, I'd say Dan's probably like, this fella has enough stuff going on with Brian. Yeah. Let me not add to that. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah.
Thankfully he didn't have issues, because I can only imagine like going through what he was going through with Brian, then having Dan be a dick as well on top of that.
I think Drake even said in like that last episode with the interviews, he just flat out said like he does not have a bad word to say about Dan.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He never had a bad experience with him. He just always was friendly and supportive of him, so
yeah. So Drake ended up calling his dad, right? And obviously told him, like, look, Brian was caught and this, and this is why. And when Joe first heard about this, he was super, super happy. And he was like, I'm so glad that nothing happened to you. Because obviously he knew that him and Drake were very close. But obviously he didn't realize that Drake was actually a victim of Brian's.
Well, again, we're going back to Joe's point of view. And Joe made a very specific, do not leave Drake alone with that man. So yeah.
In his head, he probably thought,
well, there's no way it could be my son.
Yeah. My son was looked after.
Yeah.
But little did he know, unfortunately, it was actually his son. And when Joe did find out that it was Drake, understandably so, it obviously completely destroyed him. And Drake was obviously really, really impacted about the whole situation. And he was going through a lot of like self-destruction, self-loading, alcohol abuse, substance abuse, all kind of usual stuff that people go through when they're dealing with a similar situation. Drake ended up going with his family to court for Brian's sentencing. And on Drake's side was himself, his mom and his brother, like only them. And Brian's side was basically full of people. None of the people there supporting Brian were representatives from like Nickelodeon, but there was a lot of famous people there supporting Brian.
Producers from other shows that Brian had worked on, movies, things like that.
A statement that Drake made in court to people that were there in support of Brian was, "How dare you? You will forever have a memory of sitting in this courtroom and defending this person, and I will forever have the memory of the person you are defending violating me and doing unspeakable acts and crimes, and that's what I'll remember."
I thought that was a very powerful statement.
Especially coming from a teenager as well.
Yeah, from a 15-year-old.
So long. Yeah, so Brian pleaded no contest to the two charges of child sexual abuse, which was lewd. Is that how you say that?
Lewd and...
Take it away, Briggsy. Tell us what the abuse charges are, because I can't say these.
Lascivious. Yeah. Lascivious?
That sounds about right.
I think so.
Lewd and lascivious act with a child of 14 or 15 and oral copulation with a child under 16.
That, like, compared to what he did, that pissed me off.
Yeah.
What's worse, he only got 16 months in prison and was ordered to register as a sex offender. 16 months. And 16 he literally months. Destroyed
this kid's life.
Drake's life.
Yeah.
And who knows who else, you know? Because I highly doubt that at the age
that was his first time.
Yeah, that he just decided one day that he was going
to
do this.
No, he had the whole thing down to a fucking T. Like, that man was calculated with his plan and grooming Drake to the lead up to the abuse.
He had his house kitted out as basically like Neverland.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was a master manipulator.
He knew what he was doing. There is not one doubt in my mind that Drake, like, it was hardly only Drake.
Yeah. No, I don't believe that.
I don't believe that for one second. Like, even the way, like, he was so manipulative, he ended up completely isolating Drake.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Had Drake put his full trust and faith into this man to then turn around and abuse him. So I don't think, nah. That was planned. Like, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And 16 months is appalling. Yeah. That is a joke. That is literally a joke.
What I found the most shocking was some of the details of the letters of support that were sent in. Like, some of them were just pure victim blaming. Like, not even saying that Brian didn't do it. Just that it was purely, he had to have been led to do that.
Like, as if fucking Drake was just trolling himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Brian.
It's kind of like, you know, when
bullshit, man.
When women, like, come forward after being raped and the first question is, what were you wearing?
Oh, fuck that shit.
So it's like, it's the victim blaming. It's, oh, well, what did you do?
Yeah. And to be honest, in this case, right, the shit with the women is already fucked enough as is. But in this case, it's actually even worse. Because even if, let's just say, in some weird twisted world, Drake was throwing himself at Brian and he was trying to get jiggy with Brian, at the end of the day, Brian was still an adult, yeah?
Yeah.
So Brian should have still turned around and go, you are a fucking child, put it back in your pants, please.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So even in that, even if these letters of support were saying, now we all know, obviously, look, Drake had no blame in this whatsoever. But even if, let's say, that was true, it still doesn't really mean shit. Because at the end of the day.
But, like, you know, what came out with these letters as well, a lot of the people that wrote the letters didn't know what Brian was being convicted of.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so true. Sneaky as well.
Yeah.
Will I list off some of them?
Yeah.
So some of the support letters came from celebrities including Alan Thicke, Tom DeSanto, Ron Melendez, Ryder Strong, Will Friedle, and James Marsden. And actually, a quote from James Marsden is, I assure you, what Brian has been through in the last year is the suffering of 100 men.
Yeah, because it's Brian suffering, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought that was a bit.
So once, like, even that statement itself kind of goes to show what you were saying, that if that person fucking knew what Brian was actually doing, why on earth would anyone with half a brain turn around and say that this man was suffering?
Yeah. Taryn Killam also wrote a letter of support stating, I've seen the effects the situation has had on Brian, and I know for a fact that he regrets any mistakes made.
Which is obviously bullshit as well, because if he did regret any of the mistakes, you don't make the same mistake over and over and over, right? You make a mistake once, if you regret it, you learn from that mistake, you don't do it again. So if the shit that he was, it's abuse. It's not a mistake. It's abuse. It's a clear pattern of abuse. It shouldn't even be referred to as a mistake, because that is not.
Yeah.
What he was doing was no fucking mistake.
Joanna Kearns was a person that Brian met while working on Growing Pains, and she wrote in her letter, I can only believe that there must have been some extreme situation or temptation exerted upon him to influence his actions.
Yeah, because Drake was really, really, you know, trolling himself at Brian when he was asleep, mind you. Because wasn't the first time it happened.
Yeah,
was
he woke up.
In his fucking sleep. He was asleep. So how on earth could you even classify that as an extreme situation or a temptation exerted?
Yeah. And like you said, at the end of the day, Brian is an adult. This is a teenage
boy.
It still
doesn't fucking matter.
Regardless
it doesn't matter.
Regardless of temptation.
He's
not a piece of chocolate that you shouldn't be eating when you're on a diet.
Exactly.
And Kimmy Robertson said, I believe with all my heart that Brian was pressured and pushed beyond belief before he caved.
Man, I hope all these people who gave these statements are fucking bashing their head against their wall at the moment going, why the fuck did I write that after seeing this shit come out?
Yeah. As far as I know, both of those women, Joanna Kearns and Kimmy Robertson, have both come out and
Probably retracted what they said
once they found out what was actually going on. I know one of them definitely did, but I'm pretty sure both of them did.
Yeah. And like, I can understand as well. Look, like, I'm saying that now because it's just extremely frustrating for me. But I can understand as well, like, it was very sneaky the way this whole thing was done, because obviously if they weren't told what exactly happened, they were just like, for example, Becca, right? If Becca came up to me and goes, Nancy, I'm going to court next week, like, I just need you to write a little character statement about who I am as a person and what you know me as, right, without telling me what her charges are, of course I'm gonna write Becca is a lovely, kind person and she could have murdered her whole family. But I don't fucking know that. And I'm just going to be like, oh, I love Becca. She's amazing. Like, she's great.
But,
A director and stage manager from The Amanda Show, Richard and Beth Correll, actually said it would be a pleasure to work with Brian again.
Once again, I really hope
And they did all work together again.
Ah, I was going to say, I really hope these people fucking took that back.
No, they worked together again on the Disney Channel. On A Suite Life of Zack and Cody.
To be honest, am I surprised? The whole industry is clearly full of paedophiles in any way. So I can kind of see why they're like, I will try touch kids every other weekend in any way. So why not have another fucking sex offender work
like,
for
him?
He was registered at that point. That's what I mean. So that will tell you, like, how fucked up is this industry? Like, even that cunt will probably not get a job in Tesco.
Yeah, like, I just don't understand how a registered sex offender was let onto the set of The Suite Life of Zack and
Cody. Has also a charge for assaulting a minor. A minor. So it wasn't like it was like, oh, he was just on the sex offender and he could have, like, whatever, been doing inappropriate shit with another adult. Like, it was a child.
Yeah.
And they had him working on Disney Channel with more kids.
So not only has this cunt ruined Drake and Josh forever, he's also ruined The Suite Life of Zack and Cody, because I can't watch that either anymore.
Yeah. But, like, you think back to the women writers that lost their jobs and they literally didn't have a career after leaving Nick.
Yeah.
And this fellow is a registered sex offender convicted of inappropriate acts with a child.
Skipping off to the Disney Channel.
Yeah. Go work on another kid's show.
Like, do they seriously not do background checks, or do they just not care? Like, I don't understand.
Like,
it blows my mind.
Something shocking that wasn't covered in the documentary is later on in life, Drake Bell found himself in quite a strange situation for someone with his past. Well, what I thought was strange, apparently this is pretty normal.
Mm.
In 2021, Drake pleaded guilty to child endangerment and a misdemeanor charge of disseminating matter harmful to juveniles. He was sentenced to 2 years of probation and 200 hours of community service. A quote from him is, I was being investigated and that was really difficult on my family, and thankfully through 18 months of subpoenaing my social media and phones and computers and witnesses and everything, it turned out that most of what was being accused of me wasn't true. But I did have these conversations, and so I took on responsibility for that and ended up pleading guilty because just financially, I was just devastated. I had just had a son and I didn't want to put my family through all of this anymore. So I ended up going through the process the way that I did, and I'm very regretful. He said that basically he had these conversations with the teenage girl, but at the time he didn't know her age, and once he found out her age, he cut off all contact. And another quote from him is, I think she got upset and she was coming to my concert still, and I was doing everything I could to keep my distance, and then she made all these allegations of things that had happened at a concert. But throughout the investigation, there were witnesses who were there the whole time who refuted it, and people who were not even connected with me that were friends of hers and her family's that were there the whole time. And a lot of the things that she said about sending inappropriate pictures and things like this, it was able to be investigated and showed that none of that existed. In September 2021, Bell released a video on Instagram addressing why he pleaded guilty. Quote, it's not me telling you that the claims are false, but the state of Ohio has proven that claims to be false. If these claims were remotely true, my situation would be very different. I would not be here at home with my wife and son. I just found that whole situation, like, weird. Like, it's just such a coincidence.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because you do hear about a lot of stories where stuff like this happens with people who are famous, clout chasing at the end of the day. And like, there's been so many, I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but I know for a fact there's been, you've heard so many cases of stuff like this where people are claiming that celebrities are after doing this or sending them photos or whatever, and it's usually with like minors and stuff, and yeah, then it ends up not being true, or people just making shit up for the sake of, like I said, clout and stuff. So I don't know, I don't really know what to say or believe when it comes to that. Like, obviously, look, something happened, but clearly not what this person was claiming happened. None of that ended up being true.
Yeah, I don't know, it's just, it's weird. And like, after seeing Drake in the documentary and talking about what happened to him and kind of opening up, it makes it very hard to believe that he would do that to another person.
To someone else, because he understands it. But then again, right, the flip side of it is, and this once again has been proven time and time again, now we've definitely covered off people who have gone through similar stuff in the past, and a lot of the times, unfortunately, it's the victims of abuse ends up becoming the abusers further down the line. Like, that is a pattern.
Yeah.
You know, that happens. I'm not saying this is what's happening with Drake. God, I hope not, because I definitely have a lot of empathy and sympathy for him. Well, not really empathy, because I haven't really gone through what he's gone through, but I have a lot of sympathy for his situation and stuff. And, you know, hearing him speak out about it on the documentary, I did get emotional and stuff watching him, you know, talking about his experience. So I don't want to think that he's a bad guy, but then again, like, you don't know without the information. Like, I don't even know
the facts.
I don't know the full ins and outs. Obviously, once again, because that girl was a minor, you know, there isn't a lot of information out there of what really exactly happened with the whole situation.
We've only got like his side of the story.
As far as I know, from what I did hear, I remember when this was all, you know, popping up in the news and stuff in 2021, was that apparently he was talking to some girl online who I think was only about 15 or something. Like, I know she was a minor, she was under the age of 18, but apparently the conversation was harmless enough, but then she was saying that he was coming on to her and that he was sending her inappropriate videos and asking her for inappropriate videos and all the rest, and then she ended up reporting it, and that's how he got charged and stuff because of it. But then apparently when they investigated, none came out, but yeah, he still got charged. So I don't really fucking understand what happened there.
I tried to like research and like put the story together, but there's just so many different versions of it. It's just,
I think it is because obviously the fact that it's a minor, a lot of stuff can't be said, and obviously the victim can't be,
like, we only know about Drake's story because Drake told it on the documentary until he told
as an adult. Like, that wouldn't have came out like at all
if he never said that on the documentary. We would have never known.
Exactly.
So we spoke about Jason Handy and Brian Peck, but there was a third person to be arrested working for Nickelodeon, and his name was Azelle Channel. I think I'm saying that right, I don't know. He worked for Nickelodeon in Burbank, and his story is pretty strange. It's not anything to do with a child that worked for Nickelodeon. He actually brought a child to the Nickelodeon law and was convicted of abusing the child on the law.
What?
Yeah. So he
was still a predator, but instead of preying on the kids he worked with, he just brought in an outsider to his place of work to then abuse them.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That's what I mean. It's
that
just
is
fucked.
Wild.
Not only that, he was a convicted sex offender already when hired him. Yeah.
So yeah, background checks definitely were not
a thing. They just weren't a thing. Yeah. And this wasn't even that long ago.
No.
Like, all of this shit happened like back in, what was it, late 90s, early 2000s. So it's not like this all happened back in the 50s where everyone's documents were all in files of paper and it'd be a nightmare to go back and look over someone's history. Like, surely it wouldn't have been that difficult back then.
No, I think that literally all three of these men got arrested between the years of 2003 and 2006.
So even more recent. Yeah. That's even more recent than what I was initially thinking.
Yeah, pretty fucked up. Like, three people working for Nickelodeon in such a small period of time. Like, Nickelodeon has obviously come out and said that their background checks are way more extensive
I really hope so.
I fucking
hope so.
It really doesn't take much to get better from this.
No. Yeah, it couldn't have got much worse.
To be honest, this should have been the bare minimum that they should have been doing from the get-go. Especially, like, that just blows my mind. The fact that there was kids working and the fact that they just didn't care to do any type of background checks on their staff when they were working with kids.
Yeah.
Like, that just adds a whole new level. Like, it's bad enough not doing background checks for people who are just working a normal job, do you know what I mean? But let alone somebody who has access to children.
Yeah.
So now we're kind of going back to talking about that, and we're moving away from the whole Brian Peck Drake situation.
Yeah, that was kind of it. Like, Drake and Josh was made, Brian Peck moved to Disney Channel, there was nothing ever kind of that came out about him again. I don't know what happened at Disney, but nothing that's come out so far.
So let's hope that that's nothing happened and that's the reason why.
Yeah. But despite all of that, all three arrests, Dan was still really, really popular. And, like, this all happened while he was, like, basically the face of Nickelodeon.
He was producing a lot of the shows where these people were working. Like, they were working for him, basically.
It didn't damage his career.
No. Or his reputation.
He just got more and more and more popular. And Nick and Disney were, like, in competition at this point. And Dan was Nickelodeon's answer. He just seemed to know what kids would want to watch.
Yeah. And to be fair, a lot of his shows, now, looking back now, I'm disgusted with myself, but I'm just going to blame it on little naive Nancy. Like, I didn't really... There was a few things that made me go, that's a bit strange. But overall, I was, like, obsessed with his shows growing up. Like, I was a Nickelodeon child growing up. So, like, a lot of the shows that Dan Schneider produced were a lot of, like, my favourite shows growing up, you know?
Yeah, me too. But I do remember kind of getting to an age where I was like, this fuck business is weird. And that's
that was weird. That was weird. Yeah. Like, that was probably... I was always a no feet kind of girl growing up as well. Like, I've always hated feet. Always hated toes. All that kind of stuff. So definitely when shit like that would come up on TV, I'd be like, what the hell?
Yeah. Cool. But Dan loved technology, and when social media came around, he was constantly on it. He was constantly making videos, like, while they were on set to post online. And some of them were pretty weird.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was of Miranda Cosgrove, and, like, she's on set of iCarly, and she's, like, standing, like, in front of, you know, the lockers on the set. And, like, Dan basically gets up in her face with his camera, and you can just see that she's uncomfortable, and she kind of starts, like, sliding herself downwards, like, out of the frame, and she's kind of laughing, but it's, like, a nervous laugh.
Yeah.
You can tell she doesn't really know
what to do.
There's another one with Jeanette McCurdy where her back is facing Dan, and he runs up behind her and, like shouts, like, whoa! But Jeanette's reaction wasn't like, oh my God. Like, she screamed. Traumatically screamed. Which was I found that a bit weird, because I'm like, if you work with this man every day and he's doing stuff like this, like, you wouldn't have that big
of a reaction.
And there was an awful lot of clips where, like, the cast would be sitting on the telly and, like, Dan would come up and, like, tickle her like in her sides, like, you know, and just weird shit
behavior
where he was always like touching people.
Apparently
Jerry Traynor, who played her older brother Spencer, rumor has it he used to go onto set on his days off just to keep Dan away from people.
Yeah.
I saw a video of this where you can visibly see him getting in between Dan and Miranda.
There's even photographs of him where Dan goes to, like, put his arm around Miranda and Jerry will, like, jump into Dan's arms for the photograph. And it just seems like he's playing around, but when you actually look at it in this context, you can see he's doing everything protected. He can.
I think he was also, like, one of the only adults that were on the show, because obviously, look, like, the main cast, I mean, like, I know there's obviously, what was his name?
Your man's man all in it as well.
But, like, he was obviously dead wired to what was going on, but obviously he had a career as well that he had probably bills to pay and shit as well. Yeah. So you could tell that, like, even though he wasn't, like, directly getting involved or, like, saying stuff to Dan, you could tell that he was always being protective over the younger cast members, and he was trying to, you know, not let Dan fuck them about, I don't know.
Yeah. That's kind of where people started to speculate about Dan, I think. Like, I feel like there's always been, since maybe, like, the early, like, 20-teens.
Yeah.
There's always kind of been a speculation that there's just something off about Dan Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody really talked about it that much until Jeanette McCurdy's book came out.
Yeah.
I'm Glad My Mom Died, it's called. For people who don't know, I'd say everybody knows at this point. It's like
very good.
Yeah.
It's very good. I only recently, I actually was telling Breezy there earlier, I ended up listening to it on Spotify, because now the way you can listen to audiobooks on Spotify and they're free. So check that out for anyone who didn't know. But yeah, you can listen to it there and you can listen to the full thing there for free. And it's very, very good. Like, it's definitely one of the best books I've ever read, listened to, I suppose.
Books or autobiographies?
I don't know, I suppose it's an autobiography. It's about her telling the story of her life and her experience with her mom and being a child actor and everything. So I don't fucking know. I don't really read much, and I definitely don't read autobiography, so it could have been an autobiography, but it was good. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, and in the book she doesn't specifically say, like, Dan Schneider did this, but there is a lot of comments about her time on Nickelodeon, and she refers to who we all assume is Dan as, quote, the creator.
Yeah.
And some of the quotes from the book are, "I feel like the creator has two distinct sides. One is generous and over the top complimentary. The other side is mean-spirited, controlling, and terrifying. He will call people idiots, buffoons, stupid, dumb, sloppy, careless, and spineless. The creator knows how to make someone feel worthless." And in an interview, Jeanette McCurdy also said, "There's a lot of abuse that happens. Like, even talking about it now, my face gets hot. He would say things like, 'You would work at Yogurtland if you didn't work for me.' And he would just, like, scream stuff like that at people."
Which is just extremely toxic behavior, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, like, I feel like if you're going to be working with kids, you need to have some type of tolerance and not be so verbally abusive. Like, he was calling them some really damaging shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is starting to come out of my time. So, for example, Victorious came out in 2010, which was the year before I started university.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, yeah. I would have been in 2010. I was in secondary school.
I was in my third year of college because I didn't get into university the first time. So I should have been in university in 2010.
Yeah, I was like 12.
When I was in fourth class.
You were in fourth class?
Yeah, I was 10.
Wait, so when did you do your leaving cert?
2018. I made my communion when I was 8 because my age is the year, so I was 10. I'm a baby.
I'm old.
Now, even saying that, I didn't watch Victorious that much, but I've seen bits of it.
I did. I loved Victorious. My 12-year-old ass was obsessed. It was a good show, but definitely there was inappropriate stuff.
Yeah, I feel like Victorious is kind of the show that pushed a lot of the boundaries
came
for
out.
Me.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think it was when Victorious came out that a lot of people started, like, really noticing some of the messed up shit on the show that Dan had these kids doing, and then that's when questions started being asked. Because I remember, before the documentary, right? Yeah. Like, before any of this shit, maybe, I don't know, maybe like 6-7 years ago. It was definitely a few years after Victorious came out. I think Victorious had already ended at that stage when stuff started coming out on social media. But there was no, like, official allegations or anything like that. It was literally just people who seen the show or came across the show were putting up clips of questionable,
like,
stuff.
Watching it back and going,
hold on a second, this actually doesn't really seem okay.
No. Yeah.
Like, some of the lines were just icky. Like, there's one scene where Tori and Jade are like at a barbecue and she's like, do you want to get slapped with a sausage? And your one Jade is like, sure, and like sticking her face out and stuff, and it's just a bit,
yeah, it's a bit weird. Like, yeah, clearly adult jokes.
Yeah,
you know, that kid shouldn't even be making comments like that at their age, but yeah.
Or like the older sister was in one scene and they were talking about the wood and she was like, I want to be on the wood. What's the wood? I want to be on it.
Yeah.
Like, just icky things that didn't need to be.
Like, the show could have still been good without these types of jokes that were very clearly directed for adults. Because yeah, a child wouldn't have known. Like, when I was watching it, like, I know I was 12 and stuff, but I don't know. To be honest, like, look, times have changed. 12-year-olds nowadays are a lot more mature than we would have been when we were 12. Like, I remember literally being in school. And we actually sang a Victoria song in first year for the talent show in school.
Oh my
Me
God.
And my friends did. We sang the Bleeding, the intro song. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, we were very much children.
But, like, there are things that... There are, like, family movies, for example, that will sneak some jokes in for the adults. When you look at a lot of what DreamWorks does, and like, look yeah, at Shrek, like, there was like,
yeah, definitely
yeah, adult jokes in there, but they weren't vulgar. These yeah, were vulgar.
These were like,
and they yeah, weren't directed towards or played by children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's what kind of gives me the ick about it all. It's like, you're getting children
to say these stuff that yeah, are extremely inappropriate. Like,
yeah,
definitely.
Even one of the cameramen who worked on iCarly, Sam and Cat, and Victorious was quite shocked at some of the stuff that went on the show. Like, there'd be moments where he'd be filming a scene and he'd be like, this is a sexual innuendo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
But he also said that nobody could say anything because, like, these shows were Dan's babies. Like, you couldn't say shit.
Yeah, whatever he said yeah, went kind of thing, and nobody could really speak up about it.
But I think it's the stuff with Ariana Grande that really kind of started making people kind of look at the situation as really fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen some of these clips. So, as I said, yeah, like, I was too old to be watching this first yeah, time around,
yeah,
but I did go back and look at some of these clips and they are gross.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, there's scenes where she's like storing tomatoes in her bra. Like,
why
she's like sucking her own toes, pouring water all over her chest. There's one where she's like massaging a potato, but it literally looks like she's like wanking it off and saying, come on, give up the juice.
Like, she's yeah, actually making like sexual noises as yeah, she's like struggling to squeeze the potato.
It's just, oh my God, like, especially
with the water, that, like, she's squealing and she's doing that, and you can see like there's no effort. It was all to do with like, can I drink water upside down?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was no effort to actually
try and drink the water.
It was very upside down. It was all about pouring it over a chest and squealing and giggling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just
very inappropriate.
It's yeah, uncomfortable to watch.
It's so, like, especially, like I said, it was stuff like that made me uncomfortable as a kid, but definitely seeing these scenes now as an adult.
Yeah.
Looking back, like,
I think when you're a kid, you don't really know why it's uncomfortable for you. And then when you're older and you watch it back, you're like, that's why.
Yeah.
Dan Schneider has responded to some of the comments that people have made about the shows. And he said that, at the end of the day, I love it when the cast gets sassy with me because I get to write all the scripts with some very talented writers, but I get to put them in whatever horrible predicament I choose.
Which, even that, like, what kind of fucking mentality is that?
Yeah, it's like, basically, he's punishing them for talking up.
Yeah. Like, any kind of criticism that he got, it was like, right, well, in the next episode of whatever show, you're going to be doing something that you really don't
like. It's just toxicity at its finest. Like, that yeah, is not a healthy work environment. You know, if kids don't feel comfortable doing something, they should be able to yeah, speak out about it. And your job as a producer, writer, whatever the fuck you think you are, should be looking after your cast members and making sure that they're comfortable and you're building that kind of safe environment, not having fucking pedophiles running around the place. You're there verbally abusing your writers, your staff, your producers, your fucking everyone who's there, your yeah, cast.
I feel like, especially when it comes to working with child actors, when you're writing scenes and stuff like that, you have to be prepared for them to say, I don't want to do that, and be prepared to change it to a situation where they are comfortable.
Not turn around and say, oh, if they speak up about it, sure, I'll just put them in whatever horrible situation my twisted brain can think up of.
He treated them like animals.
Yeah.
Animals.
Yeah.
Like, there was one clip in the documentary where he was at, like, an auction, and the Victorious cast was, like, standing behind him, and he was, like, literally like a circus conductor. He was like, you can touch their hair, you can take pictures with them, you can ask them personal questions, inappropriate ones, whatever you want to do, you can do to them. And they were all just kind of standing there behind them like they were
being cattle to market.
Yeah. It was disgusting.
Absolutely disgusting.
But still, nobody saw an issue. Like,
it just kept getting worse.
He just continued to make these shows. And because he was making money for Nickelodeon and kind of keeping them ahead in this battle they had with Disney, just everybody just let him...
They weren't really asking the questions they should have been asking. They were just kind of like, well, he's making us a fuck ton of money, so just let him at it. Whatever he sees,
turn a blind eye.
Yeah.
And when he was working on Sam and Cat, apparently, like, Sam was expected to be there, or Jeanette was expected to be there 24/7, like, at his beck and call.
Mm-hmm.
But if Ariana had a video shoot or a photo shoot or whatever, like, they'd have to figure out a way around her schedule.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you have it, but there was an episode, and Jeanette McCurdy talks about it in her book, where one particular episode, and she's saying this was when it really bothered her, Ariana had to go to do some type of interview, or she was shooting her music video or something she was doing. It was something to do with her music career regardless, right? And they, like, she was like, okay, cool, I guess we're just not going to record until she comes back. But they were like, no, 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 we're still going to go ahead and record. And what they did was they substituted that episode so that Pat's character was locked inside a box, and Jeanette had to act with this wooden box and pretend that Ariana... Cat was, like, stuck in the box, and she was just saying, like, how weird it was. But then the flip side, Jeanette didn't get that treatment, because sure, when her mom passed away, she wasn't even allowed to take time off for that, and she was talking about how which is fuck all when a child loses her mother. And obviously, look, I know she didn't have the best relationship with her mother after, like, listening to her book and stuff, but still
when somebody in different your family dies, like, you still need time to grieve. I feel like no matter what your relationship with your mom was,
it's still a child losing a parent at the end of the day.
And it just wasn't normal. Like, there was, everybody around was disturbed by the fact that she was being brought to work so quickly.
Yeah.
And the situation on the set of Sam and Cat from there on just got so stressful that Nickelodeon actually ended up launching an internal investigation.
Finally.
About time.
Yeah.
So Dan is seen as contributing to the toxic work environment that is really making the show a difficult place for a lot of the people to work.
Mm-hmm.
Why it took them this long to realise that, God only knows.
Yeah.
But after the investigation, Dan is basically not allowed to interact with the cast anymore. Now, Dan says he wasn't barred from working with the actors, but chose to give notes from his office.
I don't believe
that.
He was so
trying to save face.
Like, for years and years, all he wanted to do was be on the set with the actors and be involved and make jokes and this, that, and the other. So, how is it that overnight?
Nah,
it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So it doesn't really happen where the guy running the show can't be trusted to treat people like people, but Nickelodeon couldn't get rid of him because he was too valuable. He was earning them too much money. So he just got away with everything because he was Dan Schneider.
Yeah.
So it's like, we can't get rid of you, but I guess we'll just, you're just not allowed to talk to the actors.
Yeah. So the last one of Dan Schneider's shows that we're going to cover is Zoe 101, and this one was a dramatic one because there was drama with Dan, and then there was drama with the cast in general.
Yeah,
like, this was just
a lot.
For years and years, all I've heard is, like, that show was just fucking drama central behind the scenes.
There was so much drama to do with this. That was actually the first show that I properly watched on Nickelodeon, because Zoey 101 would have been out and it would have been like one of the big shows on Nickelodeon when I first moved to where I live now and we got Nickelodeon. So Zoey 101 was like my first jam. And I remember like I loved it and then it just stopped.
Just stopped down.
They stopped it really abruptly, and obviously it makes sense now looking back because there was a lot of shit that happened. But I think the reason why, wasn't it like Jamie Lynn Spears, and she got pregnant or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She was like 17. So that in itself already, there was like so much controversy to do with that whole incident and the show ending. But there was obviously a lot more going on.
Well, when it came down to it, like that is why the show was
officially stopped. Yeah.
But I do think it probably would have been stopped anyways.
Yeah. It was a matter of time.
Yeah.
Considering.
Yeah.
So Alexa Nicholas, who played Nicole on Zoey 101, was actually on the documentary, and she kind of explained her experience on Zoey 101 and kind of her character, if you don't already know, was really girly, wore short skirts, and it was just like she'd do anything for male attention.
She was like boy crazed. And like, to be fair, they were way too, like, especially looking back now at my age, like they were way too young to even, like, it was kind of brainwashing kids, that, like, especially little girls. Like, that
she said she was 12, I think it was, on the first episode. It's like, that's far too young to be
boy crazy.
Boy crazy. Like, 12-year-olds, like, you're like, oh, the boys have cooties.
Yeah, like, that's kind of the mentality you would have had at that age, but that's not the way Dan wanted to portray these people.
She was pretty much being sexualized, like,
from a young age.
Straight away.
Yeah.
Very young age. And it wasn't just her, like, all of the girls would be in bikinis and stuff, which is normal, right? Obviously they're gonna be in bikinis, but on Zoey 101 they were very, very often in bikinis, just kind of lying around, like
for no reason.
Didn't really contribute to the story.
I just wondered what the fuck this school was doing, because they never seemed to be like in class. They're eating sushi and sunbathing, and it's like, what kind of fucking school is this?
A dream school. That's probably why I wanted to go when I was younger. Yeah, and like in one of the scenes in particular, right? So there was an episode that was all to do with this backpack. And basically Nicole has this thing and they call it a goo pack. And basically what it is, it's kind of like, how the fuck do I describe this?
Like jelly in a tube?
In a tube, kind of thing. And in this scene, Nicole's struggling to get this jelly open and she can't get it open and she's struggling with it. And when she finally manages to get it open, it squirts all over Zoey's face. And it looks, I've no other way to describe this, but it is basically a cum shot. Like there is there's no other way. I can't beat around it. Like that's basically what it's supposed to be.
The cum shots are back.
They're back. Yeah. And they seem to have never went away to begin with. They just seem to have always been there. But yeah, definitely. In the documentary, like when Alexa was, I was talking about it, she started getting really upset. And she was saying that like being around Dan made you like super aware of yourself. And bullying was just a common thing on the set. Like there was a lot of people, you know, laughing about one another, whispering. She got to experience a lot of that. And I remember her even saying stuff that she got. I don't even know if she said this in the documentary. I think this was actually something I seen. She was on a podcast. I seen a clip on TikTok and she was on a podcast talking about her experience working on Zoey 101. And she was saying, you know, there was a lot of bullying happening. And where for some reason, Zoey was like the ringleader, right? Like she was the main.
Jamie Lynn.
Yeah, Jamie Lynn Spears, sorry. She was like the ringleader of all like the girls that worked on set and stuff. So she used to, you know, invite girls out for like coffee after working, or not coffee, obviously we wouldn't be going for coffee, they were kids, but we'd be inviting them places.
I don't know, I'm pretty sure they drank coffee on the show.
Oh, they probably did.
Probably.
But they would invite, you know, the rest of the cast to certain places, and Nicole was always being kind of left out. There was a lot of kind of whispering, you know, people saying shit about her behind her back, all that kind of stuff. And she ended up getting really upset, and I can't remember exactly what happened, but somehow I think Nicole said it to her mom, and her mom might have actually went to the producers of Nickelodeon and like reported that this was happening. And then Jamie Lynn went to her big sister Brittany and told Brittany that it's actually Nicole that's bullying her instead of it being the other way around. And then one day Nicole got called to Jamie's trailer, and she went up to the trailer, and when she went up to the trailer, she's seeing that Britney was there. And Nicole, you know, describes that growing up, obviously this was in the early 2000s, Britney Spears was like in the height of her career, she was like a big pop star, like everyone knew who she was, so she was like
pre-conservatorship.
Oh yeah, pre the downfall of Britney
Spears. Pre-shaving the hair off.
Yeah, all that. Pre the mental break, but yeah, so she was obviously super excited, going, oh my god, like, she's my idol, like, whatever, she was super excited. And she goes into the trailer, Britney Spears apparently closed the door behind her, locks the door, and starts laying into Nicole. Like, obviously being a protective big sister, I don't agree, as a big sister, I can understand, but I also don't agree with Britney's actions in this case.
No.
But she apparently just started, like, roaring at Nicole, and, like, you know, calling her all sorts, and she was saying how traumatic that was coming from somebody you look up to, calling you all this stuff, and saying you're a horrible person, and that you're a bully, and that you're this, that, and the other. And she ended up getting super dizzy, and then she ended up like running out of the trailer and ended up like literally puking everywhere, and she felt so unwell because of it. But yeah, she was saying like that was super traumatic. But yeah, anyways, Britney Spears did actually end up coming out then later, because she was asked on the podcast like, okay, and are you and Britney okay now, kind of thing. And apparently, like, after the fact, Britney realized that it actually wasn't Nicole being a bully, it was her little sister that was being a little shit, so she ended up apologizing to Nicole.
Yeah.
And apparently they're all G now, but yeah.
But it didn't make things any easier for her on the actual set. It seems like everybody was kind of on Jamie Lynn and Britney's side. So
yeah.
She ended up being pretty isolated. Like, if she went to sit with everybody, they'd all just get up and walk away. Like,
yeah.
Very much, like,
hateful,
bullying on
bully
TV.
Behavior.
Like,
yeah.
In Alexa / Nicole's point of view. And by the end of season 2 of Zoe 101, she was extremely unhappy, and she literally couldn't show up without crying. And at this point, she's what, 13?
Yeah.
Like, imagine having a job at 13 that you show up to crying every day.
Yeah. Like, that shouldn't even happen as an adult, let alone when you're a child.
Yeah. And a lot of her self-worth was, like, deeply damaged from that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she said that she's, like, had to work on that her whole life since.
Yeah.
In 2017, 3 years after being banned from working with actors on Sam and Cat, Dan is back on set of two new shows, Henry Danger and Game Shakers.
So obviously by this stage, I was well out of the Nickelodeon game.
Yeah, me too.
I haven't even heard and watched these.
Yeah.
Everyone had grown up by then.
Yeah.
I'd not even heard of them.
No,
not me either before.
I think Henry Danger rings a bell, but I definitely, maybe Jenny, no, I don't even think 2017, I probably just might have heard of it, but definitely haven't even watched a clip of any of these shows.
But anyway, by then the Me Too movement had already started, and thousands of women are coming forward to speak out about their experiences with SA, etc. Me Too just exploded overnight. And
yeah, it was just everywhere.
I remember,
like,
yeah.
I remember just seeing hashtag Me Too everywhere, and I was like, what does this
what's
mean?
Going on?
Like,
what are we Me Tooing about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so a woman that worked in wardrobe for iCarly felt like she could finally call her union to let them know what was going on with the massages and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So the union said she wasn't the only one to say that this was going on, and they were already looking into it. So multiple people had
come forward
about Dan using every woman on
as his personal masseuse.
Yeah.
You can't even make this shit up, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, you're a female, come massage me.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't care what your job is, you're a female, come massage me.
But it was the Me Too movement that kind of got the whole Dan story kind of out there.
Yeah. So, like, rumours started floating around about Dan, and they exploded online,
mm-hmm.
thanks to the Me Too movement. Another investigation is launched against Dan in 2017. This is when they finally decided to let Dan go.
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo!
So, like, this guy's literally been working for Nickelodeon since the 80s.
Yeah.
And it took until 2017 to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
He did issue a statement saying he needs time off and all that shit.
basically trying to make it seem like he wasn't getting sacked.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm doing this by choice.
Yeah.
Schneider's bakery came to an end and he was literally kicked out just like that. They did, however, hand him $7 million and sent him on his way. I wish my job would give him $7 million when they sacked me.
I don't know why they got notice
and was told to leave the building there and then.
But see, I don't know, because to be honest, like, as far as employee laws go...
There is no employment law in the US.
Oh, is there not?
No.
Oh, well, that explains a lot.
There is no employment laws in the US.
Well, all my questions are answered. Because I was going to say, like, in Ireland, in any ways, the employment laws, if you get sacked, even if you are on a contract, I was like, oh, maybe, you know, he was contracted to still work with them, and because he didn't get a chance to finish up his shows, they had to give him some type of payment. But I'm like, if he's being sacked on the back of, like, misconduct, surely he wouldn't be owed anything.
I think maybe when they tried to let him go, there was pushback and he was like, I'm going to use all my power and just make a new Nickelodeon, and they were like, here's some money, just shut up and go away.
Yeah.
And this might say something to that. The investigation didn't find any inappropriate relationships or sexual harassment. So...
I also don't fucking know. What kind of investigation did you do?
Yeah.
Because clearly if some independent fucking... documentary was able to dig up all this shit,
there had to have been something going on.
Yeah. It did find evidence of being abusive to others in the workplace, though.
Okay.
So it found something, and not the full extent of it.
No.
And he got $7 million.
Even though there was fucking hard evidence that a lot of shit was actually going on and...
But he just denies everything down to the ground. He just says that it's an inaccurate representation of how him and Nickelodeon parted ways. And, you know, the whole bullshit, oh, if I could do things differently, I would. But what's done is done, blah, blah, blah. No. Like, all this bullshit, like, it wasn't a big deal.
He had so... Right, okay, because let's be honest. It seems every single one of his shows were problematic to some shape or form. In some shape or form, to some extent, they were. Fair enough, the first show you probably didn't act right, Grant, let me fix myself for the next show and do better. But it seems like he was just trending in a downward spiral, like his behaviors are getting worse and worse and worse.
And in 2021, Dan told the New York Times that he's ready to re-emerge into children's television. Please world, do not let this happen.
Just don't, Dan.
If this documentary did anything, please let it have,
like, open people's
prevented eyes him from working in children's TV again.
I hope he gets blacklisted. He should not be allowed anywhere near children's TV. He should not be allowed anywhere near TV in general. Just people. He needs to work in a basement alone. Maybe he can make his own shows from there with no other cast. He can be the only cast member. He can abuse himself all he wants, but nobody would be getting paid anywhere near enough to be dealing up with him.
No, not at all. But that was pretty much the guts of the Quiet on Set documentary.
Yeah.
With a few extra bits because we did some research.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a really, really, really fucked up situation for pretty much everyone. We don't want to say we hope you enjoyed, but we hope you found this interesting and it helped fill in some gaps if you haven't got a chance to watch the Quiet on Set documentary. And until then, you know where to find us on all of our social media.
Bye!